audience, welcome into the Mike Allen Show here on
this Friday, April 22nd. Had to think for a minute there. It's still early, so cut me some slack. My pleasure to be with you. Looking forward to the show today. Next hour, we'll have Father Tom Galloway. Father Tom, who is my friend, who's an Orthodox priest, who's about a monthly guest here on the program. He comes in the studio, which is kind of fun. Most of my guests via phone or via Skype. But Father Tom, who pastors St. Andrew's Orthodox Church here in the Lexington, Kentucky area, the same area we broadcast from, we'll be on, and we'll be talking about a number of things, including the fact that for the Orthodox, they've not yet celebrated Easter, or the Great and Holy Pascha, as they call it. In fact, their Easter this year. Sometimes the Catholic and Orthodox Easters converge, but this year their Easter is on May 1st. All comes down to the Julian calendar versus the, I'll come up with it later. Like I said, it's early. Anyway, the Orthodox are those Christians who are closest to us as Catholics. And in fact, we would say they are a church in the truest sense of the word, in the sense that they have valid priesthood, valid sacraments through apostolic succession and all the rest. As it says in the Catechism of the Catholic Church, that the Orthodox are, our communion with the Orthodox churches is so profound that it lacks little to attain the fullness that would permit a common celebration of the Lord's Eucharist. We've been divided since 1054 AD, so pray that the Lord would hasten the day in which the unity, which is his gift to us, our Lord has one church, one bride, would be realized. Anyway, so Father Tom will be on. We talk about a number of things. Still got to figure out fully what we're going to talk about. One thing I want to ask him about is how the Orthodox do confession, penance, and how they understand purgatory. So we're going to get into all that next hour. Also, I thought a compelling article in ESPN on their website about Tiger Woods' fall from grace, which began back in 2009. Here we are, 2016. It appears possible, at least, that Tiger's golf career is over. But as the article, which is done by, let's see, what's his name, Wright Thompson argues that the seeds of Tiger's fall happened long before his wife found those text messages on his phone and everything began to unravel. And it particularly has to do with the death of his father and Tiger's relationship with his father. So we're going to talk about that some on the program today, because I think there are some truths there that are translatable and transferable into our own family lives. And also, we'll get into two men and their Twitter troubles. All that and more in the program today. Of course, we'll spin the Dollar Catechism wheel, look back in history, and make our What Were You Thinking nominees. Certainly welcome you on the program today. 573-4-BREAD-4. If you've got a comment or a question, 573-4-BREAD-4, or you can email me, MikeAllenShow@gmail.com. Of course, the big news that's been everywhere since yesterday afternoon, the sudden and unexpected death of Prince Rogers Nelson. The musician, 57-year-old musician, was found dead on his estate, had been having some health issues that are a little bit fuzzy and unclear. Reported that he had the flu a couple of weeks ago, that they're going to do an autopsy today and we'll discover the cause of his death. I was never a huge Prince follower, but I know a lot of people who were, and I know a lot of people who are outstanding musicians who rave on and on about what a superior, about Prince's musicianship and what a great musician he was. So rest in peace, Prince Rogers Nelson. He was obviously, like all of us, a very complex person. I'm pretty sure that he had a Christian faith, but we pray for him and for all those who knew him and loved him. And certainly it's been a rough year in the music business, for sure. Some of our musical icons, it seems like, we're losing at a rapid pace. Again, 573-4-BREAD-4, if you want to call in. We'll give you the question of the day in the next segment. The reading today, from the Gospel of John, chapter 14. We are through this Easter season, it seems like, in the Gospel all week. We've been here in these exchanges between Jesus and his disciples the night before his death. We were in John chapter 13, which of course, unfolds the beautiful account of Jesus' humility, of his girding himself, of his washing the feet of his disciples, of course, of the predictions of the betrayal of one of those whose very feet he washed, one who received Eucharist and then left, Judas, of course. And there is this sense of increasing intensity and foreboding, probably so much so that in John chapter 14, today's reading, verses 1 through 6, Jesus said to his disciples, "Do not let your hearts be troubled." You may recognize this passage because it's oftentimes one that is read in funerals. In fact, I have a friend who doesn't like this passage because of that association. She feels like every time she hears it, it's in that setting when she's saying goodbye to someone she loves. I would say, don't let that setting steal away from you the great hope and promise in this passage. Do not let your hearts be troubled. You have faith in God, have faith also in me. In my Father's house, there are many dwelling places. I think the old King James says, in my Father's house, there are many mansions. If there were not, would I have told you that I'm going to prepare a place for you? And if I go and prepare a place for you, I will come back again and take you to myself, so that where I am, you also may be. So you've got this, obviously, this very heavy-handed foreshadowing that something big is about to go down, that he is going to be departing them, leaving them for a season. Of course, like so many things with the disciples, things become much clearer after his death and resurrection through the light of the Spirit, and which would be the case, by the way, for all of us, always looking through the lens of faith. Things become clear that are otherwise obscure. It's faith that leads to understanding, not always understanding that leads to faith. This is part of the reason why, as I talked about yesterday, this whole understanding of arguments for the existence of God and apologetics and so forth, they do have some value, I think, particularly in strengthening the faith of those perhaps who are struggling with doubts and questions and the assault that living in this world can have upon faith. But very few, if any, argued into the kingdom of God, because it's not understanding that leads to faith. It's faith that leads to understanding. Those are the words of St. Augustine. Anyway, so I will come back again and take you to myself, so that where I am, you also may be. Where I'm going, you know the way. St. Thomas said to him, "Master, we do not know where you are going. How can we know the way?" Seems like a legitimate question. And but par for the course for the Gospel of John, in that Jesus seems to be talking oftentimes at a different level than those with whom he's conversing. You think about his exchange with his opponents there in John chapter 2, when he talks about tearing down this temple and in 3 days I will rebuild it. They're thinking, of course, of bricks and mortar. Jesus is talking about his own body, or Jesus' exchange with Nicodemus in the next chapter, where Jesus talks about being born from above and Nicodemus wants to know how in the world he'll enter his mother's womb, or the woman from Samaria who wants to know where is a bucket by which she can draw this living water of which he's talking about. Jesus talking in a whole different plane, and his disciples, even those closest to him, unable to grasp it. "Master, we do not know where you're going. How can we know the way?" Jesus said to him, "I am the way and the truth and the life. No one comes to the Father except through me." I would say most Christians are familiar with this verse. "I am the way and the truth and the life. No one comes to the Father except through me." This reminds me of that beautiful thing that Pope Benedict said in his first letter, Deus Caritas Est, or God is love. Being Christian is not about some, let me see if I can find the quote exactly, because it is so good. It's a reminder to that being a Christian is not simply an intellectual exercise. It's not it's not simply a mental assent to a set of beliefs. It is an encounter. It's an encounter with a person. The way is not, Bishop Robert Barron talks about this a lot. What set Jesus apart from other religious leaders throughout history is that they would oftentimes point to, this is the way, follow it. Here is the path. What set Jesus apart is that it all rests or falls on his person, on who he is, not simply a code. Here's the idea. Here's the quote from Pope Benedict. Being Christian is not the result of an ethical choice or a lofty idea, but the encounter with an event, a person, which gives life a new horizon and a decisive direction. When Jesus says he is the way, the truth, and the life, no one comes to the Father but through him. He's not only speaking of heavenly realities. We oftentimes associate that verse, John 14:6, with the promise of how to get to heaven. Oh, it's a verse for here and now as well. If you want to know the way, if you want truth, if you want life, they're not simply concepts. They're in a person, a real person, flesh, who lived here among us, who died and rose and is more alive than ever, and whom we can access via faith and the church he founded. Jesus, be our way, our truth, and our life. We'll be back in just a minute with more, including our question of the day. This is The Mike Allen Show. Past the hour, you're back on the Mike Allen Show. The sweet sounds of Glen Campbell. Glen Campbell, who is 80 years old today. One of my favorite Glen Campbell songs. Born in Delight, Arkansas. The singer, because actually he's listed, at least on this one web source, as actor-singer. I might take issue with the first designation. We'll talk about that here in a minute. But happy birthday to Glen Campbell, who is in the latter stages of Alzheimer's. If you've seen the Glen Campbell documentary, I'll Be Me, really a very poignant and powerful documentary on his last tour and as his dementia was beginning to dominate his life. A supremely talented musician and a man of faith. We wish and pray all the best for Glen Campbell and for his family. I thought about, question of the day. Glen Campbell had a little run at acting back in the day, of course, which is not uncommon. You know, a singer musician becomes a mega celebrity. They want to utilize that in any way possible. And he was, of course, in the original True Grit, the film for which John Wayne won his Oscar. Now, this may be anathema to some of you Duke fans out there, but I actually prefer the Coen Brothers True Grit with Jeff Bridges over the original True Grit with John Wayne. Now, I will say this. I saw the remake first, and then I saw the John Wayne version. But part of the reason that I don't like the John Wayne version as much, unfortunately, though I love Glen Campbell as a musician, pretty bad actor, quite frankly. Horrible actor, really. But he's not alone in that. There are plenty of singers turned actors who need to not quit their day job, if you know what I mean. But then there are others who have been fantastic. And so that's the question I'm asking today. Who do you think is the best singer turned actor, either is or was? They don't have to be current. They don't even have to be alive, just throughout history. Who is the best singer turned actor? And who is or was the worst singer turned actor? And you can remark by giving me a call or text 573-4BREAD-4. 5734-BREAD-4, or you can email me, MikeAllenShow@gmail.com, or you can post your response on Facebook or on Twitter. We've gotten a few responses so far. Tom says, Frank Sinatra, hands down, which I would assume he's referring to the best ever, Frank Sinatra, who actually, I think, won an Academy Award for his work in From Here to Eternity. Gary says he would give credit to Justin Timberlake. So there's a contemporary artist for you. And I think Frank Sinatra is close. I think the best was Bing Crosby. As for the worst, I'd point to Madonna, probably. Yeah, Madonna, not very good, but I don't know. Have you seen Carrie Underwood? Whew, not good. Shannon says, yes, she'll agree with Frank Sinatra, but she also thinks Bette Midler and Barbara Streisand are great singers, actors in their own right. And then Dave says the worst would be Snoop Dogg, so bad he's actually good, and the best, Will Smith. So if you want to chime in, 5734-BREAD-4, or email me, MikeAllenShow@gmail.com. Rough night for my Cincinnati Reds last night. You know, it used to be that as a Reds fan, we may struggle against other teams, but we could always say, thank God for the Cubs. Well, those days are over. The Cubs now say, thank God for the Reds. So my Cincinnati Reds, who were 7-2 at home, 1-5 on the road, welcomed the Cubs in for the beginning of a four-game series. And I was thinking coming in, well, maybe we could win a game or two. And unfortunately, Jake Arrieta going to the mound for the Chicago Cubs last night, perhaps the best pitcher in the National League. And all Jake Arrieta did was, well, I'll let you hear the final out of his performance.
Here comes the 2-2. In the air, this should do it. Jason Hayward makes a catch. It's a no-hitter. Jake Arrieta has done it again.
Jake Arrieta with the second no-hitter of his career, and the Chicago Cubs beat by Cincinnati Reds. You ready for this? 16-0 last night. I know it's only one game out of 162, but given the fact that the Reds and Cubs have played four games and only one this year has even been close, with the Cubs winning all four, that's wow. So, like I said, this is Cubs fans. You could go from over a century of misery to 1 year of sublime glory. It's looking like it so far, for sure. Other big news last night. Golden State on the road at Houston, no Steph Curry, his gimpy ankle, I guess, still keeping him off the court. And the Rockets, with James Harden's jumper, the bearded one with 2.7 seconds remaining, capping off his 35-point performance, giving them a 97-96 win over the Warriors. So the dream of running through the playoffs undefeated for the Warriors, that's been put to bed. They need to get Steph Curry back as soon as possible, no doubt. As I told you, I really came across this story yesterday. It's really worth reading, and you can find a link to it through the show's blog, MikeAllenShow.blogspot.com, MikeAllenShow.blogspot.com. It's called The Secret History of Tiger Woods. The death of his father set a battle raging inside the world's greatest golfer. How he waged that war is the tale of how Tiger lost his way. Of course, Tiger Woods is, was certainly an icon, not only for greatness in golf, but just greatness, period. I know reading about him at an early age, there in his early 20s, I remember reading an article from his father who suggested, Earl, his dad, that Tiger would be one of the most significant human beings, not just one of the most significant golfers or most significant athletes, but be one of the most significant human beings that ever lived. Almost talking about him in sort of transcendent terms. Of course, his fall has been so public and so devastating. It really has been, he's been like a classic Greek tragic hero. But one of the interesting things to read about in the article is how really the seeds for Tiger's struggles and the bad choices that he made and the unraveling of his life and his career really trace back to the death of his father just about 10 years ago. We're coming right up on the 10th anniversary of his father's death. I don't think it's possible to encapsulate just how close he and his father were, according to Wright Thompson, who wrote the piece here. He grew up without siblings or many friends. Tiger and Earl did everything together, hitting balls into a net out in the garage or spending hours at the golf course. And when they'd finish, Earl would order a rum and Diet Coke, and Tiger would get a Coke with cherries, and they'd sit and nurse their drinks like two old men. The golf pro at the Navy course where they played, Earl being a veteran, Joe Groman, worried that Tiger didn't have any friends his own age until high school. His friends were Earl and Earl's old military buddies. That's who he played golf with, retired old soldiers and sailors and Marines. Fighter jets took off and landed at the airstrip parallel to the 17th and 18th fairways. Tiger heard the stories and saw the deep love even strangers felt for each other. His entire childhood revolved around these men and their code. We'll come back to this in the next segment, but where things begin to go south for Tiger and in his relationship with his dad. I think there's a translatable lesson there for a lot of us. Anyway, so let's move on now to the What Were You Thinking Awards for the day. We've got a few nominees. All right, so students at a U.S. high school in Wisconsin were stunned when a classmate put on a Ku Klux Klan costume to deliver an English class presentation. I'm reminded of that line from George Costanza after a work indiscretion in which he said to his boss, "Was that wrong? Should I not have done that? If someone had only told me that sort of thing were frowned upon." Really? You give a presentation in a Ku Klux Klan outfit and the teacher allows it? Oh, my goodness. Evidently, students were assigned to research a topic related to the 1920s, and he chose to focus on crime, but provided little information specific to the KKK. All right. Our second nominee, McDonald's customer accused of putting soda in water cup, charged with robbery. A McDonald's customer in Arkansas accused of emptying his cup of water and filling it with soda now faces a robbery charge. See, it's people like you, McDonald's customer, Cody Morris, that ruin it for the rest of us. Because when I go into a restaurant, like a fast food restaurant, and I'm being good, not drinking the soda that I want, and maybe I order a water, they always hand me this tiny cup. And I'm always like, really? Can I not get a bigger cup? And usually they'll relent. But the reason they do that is because there are people who cheat. People like you. Anyway. But the winner we're going to give to the Wall Street Journal, who allowed a full-page ad in their newspaper recently from a group denying the Armenian genocide. I don't know how that slipped past the copy editors. Truth Equals Peace full-page ad from factcheckarmenia.com stopped the allegations. What next? You're going to have some Holocaust deniers running ads in your paper as well? Seriously, there's a this ad with the moon and star symbol of Turkey at the bottom, please. Anyway, we'll be back in a minute. This is the Mike Allen Show.
County, and I drive the main road, searching in the sun for another overload. I hear you singing in the wire, I can hear you through the tall lineman is still on the line.
We're right at the bottom of the hour, back on the Mike Allen Show, 29 minutes before the top of the hour. Glenn Campbell's 80th birthday today. That may be Glenn Campbell's greatest song. Of course, there would be perhaps no Glenn Campbell in terms of his superstar status had there not been a Jimmy Webb. Jimmy Webb, the songwriter who wrote that song, Wichita Lineman, which has been covered by many other artists as well, but of course owned by Glenn Campbell. He wrote By the Time I Get to Phoenix, Galveston. It's also written Up, Up, and Away, MacArthur Park. I mean, you just go down the list. Jimmy Webb, of course, one of the great songwriters ever. But happy birthday to Glenn Campbell, and certainly praying for him and for his family. And as we said earlier, prayers for the repose of the soul of Prince Rogers Nelson, the artist forever now known as Prince, who passed away yesterday at the age of 57, waiting autopsy results today to determine the cause of his death. I wanted to use a little Prince music as bumpers today, but when I went on YouTube, discovered that Prince, I guess like Garth Brooks, for example, has stripped YouTube of the rights to his music. So, and I don't think you want me singing it, so we'll have to do without today, but certainly eternal rest grant unto him. And for all those musical favorites who have passed away this year, of course, Prince also an aspiring actor. He was in the semi-biopic Purple Rain. It was for that film that his song Purple Rain, I think, won the Best Song Academy Award. But I'm asking a question really inspired by Glenn Campbell's horrible performance in True Grit. Who is the best singer turned actor in history? And that could be somebody current or somebody former. You know, sometimes you have singers who become actors or whatever, or at least attempt to become actors. Who's the best? And then who's the worst? Would you put Glenn Campbell among the worst? His run in True Grit was pretty bad, I will say. Would you go with Carrie Underwood if you saw Soul Surfer or her attempted remake of The Sound of Music? Carrie Underwood, whose music I love, her acting not so much. So we'd love to hear from you. 573-4BREAD-4. You can call or text, or you can email me, mikeallenshow@gmail.com. Or if you got a question or a comment on anything else, we're waiting at the here in about 30 minutes to have Father Tom Galloway here on the program. Father Tom, who is a friend of mine, who's an Orthodox priest and a regular monthly guest on the program. They're getting ready for their own Holy Week this next week and their Easter celebration, their Great and Holy Pascha on May 1st. So anyway, back to this. Keith, who's screening the calls, just sent me a message and said Reba McEntire. I'm assuming he's meaning Reba among the worst singers turned actors. How can you overlook Reba's fine performance in Tremors? I never have watched her show. Reba, though. Dolly Parton, you know, she's kind of middle of the pack. Not too bad. Anyway, back to this Tiger Woods story. I was talking about the close relationship that Tiger and Earl, of course, being someone who follows sports and follows Tiger, always followed Tiger because he was compelling television. And he was sort of the black hat for me. I always rooted against Tiger in majors because I didn't want him to pass my childhood hero, Jack Nicklaus, even though it seemed for a while there that Tiger would pass Jack like a speeding car by a parked vehicle on the side of the road. But I knew about this relationship that Tiger and Earl had, and how Earl really, who had been a self-taught golfer himself and had really did not picked up a stick until he was in his 40s, but had become an excellent golfer, that he had been the one to teach Tiger, and how he was really rather ruthless in his shaping of Tiger as a competitor, that he would shout things or throw his clubs down on the ground just as Tiger was swinging to toughen him up mentally, training Tiger in golf like a drill sergeant would train a warrior. Anyway, and they had this very, very close relationship. Tiger was an only child, spent days and days and hours with his dad and his dad's veteran buddies. Well, according to this story, Tiger and Earl held strong opinions about how things should work and nursed a deep, stubborn streak, so they often butted heads. No surprise. The apple doesn't fall far, I guess. The most serious rift between them, which festered for years, and this was heartbreaking to me, centered on Earl's love for women. I would assume we're using the word love there rather loosely. Tiger hated that his dad cheated on his mom and cried to his high school girlfriend about it. His parents never divorced, but moved into their own houses. And the only reason they still needed to communicate at all was their son's rising golf career. Like many overachieving kids in a broken home, Tiger found early on that his talent could help create the family he wanted. He could mend the broken places inside all of them. It's also clear that Tiger grew up first emulating his dad and then trying to be better than Earl. And as Wright Thompson writes, all sons, whether they love or hate their fathers or some combination of both, want to cleanse themselves of any inherited weakness, shaking free from the past. This is certainly true for Tiger, whose father seems to evoke conflicting emotions. The best and worst things that have happened in his life happened because of Earl. One of the things, as you read through the story and the details, and again, you can access, I put a link to the story on the show's blog, mikeallenshow.blogspot.com. You can read the entire thing. I think it's well worth the time, even if you're not a sports fan. If you just want to read a little bit of a better explanation of the epic fall that Eldrick Tiger Woods has experienced over the last 7 or 8 years, or as Wright Thompson argues, since the death of his father 10 years ago. But much of Earl's infidelities and his womanizing would take place in full view of Tiger, even as they traveled together. And Tiger hated that and yet found himself unconsciously, I guess you would say, in many ways, copying his father. Not that Tiger was a smooth player by any means early on. That's one of the things the story reveals. If you see how he was actually fairly socially awkward and maybe even a little bit weird, and really had to. There's a story in here it's talking about how he was nerdy and socially awkward. And that sometimes very awkward around women. It says one night he went to a club in New York. This is before he was married, with Derek Jeter and Michael Jordan. Evidently, Jeter and Jordan circulated, talking with ease to one beautiful woman after another. And at one point, Tiger walked up to them and asked the question that lives in the heart of every junior high boy and nearly every grown man, too. What do you do to talk to girls? Evidently, Derek Jeter and Michael Jordan looked at each other and then back at Tiger, sort of stunned. Go tell him you're Tiger Woods, they said. And so that really kind of led Tiger into this profound pattern of womanizing that really ended up destroying his marriage. And of course, it was evidently the Thanksgiving night. He was neglectful of his phone, didn't delete texts. That was his wife, Elin, discovered some of the texts, I think, from Rachel Yucatel and perhaps from some other women with whom he had encounters, and started, of course, that violent exchange and Tiger fleeing and crashing his car and all the rest. And that's, of course, what led to the unraveling, Tiger's public apology, and really, his life has not been the same at all since. But one of the things that was particularly sad to me in reading the article, because I've seen this play out in the lives of others, and it was a very sobering thing for me as a father, and particularly as a father of sons. I would just say even a father of sons and daughters, is how profound the impact is that we fathers have on our sons and on our daughters, and how that they observe that we treat women and how we interact with women. I've seen it time and time again. I've seen men who cheat on their wives, whose marriages collapse because of it, or even, like in the case with Tiger's parents, even though they may not divorce, but there's a deep wound in the marriage because of the infidelity. What an impact, even in those sons who see their father's infidelities and they hate them and they despise it. They so oftentimes find themselves falling into the same patterns. I'm not saying that to excuse Tiger or to any way minimize the guilt of his destructive behavior. But I'm saying it should be a profoundly sobering realization for us who are fathers, because our children pick up on things. Our sons pick up on the ways that we look at women, the way we talk about women, the kind of jokes that we tell, things that perhaps a man may think are hidden, perhaps a habit of pornography, seeds that are sown that can bear bitter fruit in the lives of our children. Our daughters see the way we talk about women and think about women and what we value and see as valuable in women, and they will oftentimes form their own self-worth accordingly. It's an article worth reading, as I said. We'll be back in just a minute. This is The Mike Allen Show. Minutes before the hour, you're back on the Mike Allen Show. A little Cher there from the movie Mermaids. Cher, who I think is a remarkably and surprisingly good actress. We're talking about that today. Singers turned actors. Who's the best? Who's the worst that you've seen? 573-4BREAD-4. Inspired to that question because of the birthday of Glenn Campbell today, who's 80, whose music I love. Glenn Campbell, one of those legends who unfortunately seemed to be quickly passing away. I had Prince's death yesterday, and of course Merle Haggard's recently, and Glenn Campbell, who's in the latter stages of Alzheimer's disease, turning 80 today, but his acting not so much. If you ever saw True Grit, pretty bad. So there is a long litany of those who are brilliant actors who were singers first, and also brilliant singers who became horrible actors. So I'm asking who you think is the best and the worst. You can chime in either by calling me 573 or texting 573-4BREAD-4. You can email me MikeAllenShow@gmail.com, or you can post your response on Facebook or on Twitter, Mike Allen Show, the handle. See if we got any others. Yeah, somebody mentioned Bette Midler and Barbara Streisand. I think that definitely Barbara Streisand, I think, in particular, as an actress, very, very talented. And, of course, I'm a little partial to Barbara because my late father liked her music so much. So, again, 573-4BREAD-4. We would love to hear from you. One thing I'd like to do is look back in history a little bit on this day, April 22nd, throughout the ages. What else happened?
Where are we, dude?
These are the circuits of history, gentlemen. They'll take us to any point in time we wish.
Who are we?
Gentlemen, we're history.
Don't know much about history.
So on this day in 1451, the birthday of the young Isabella, who would go on to be the Queen of Spain, of course, and along with her husband Ferdinand, sponsored Columbus' voyage to the New World. Isabella, I would say, one of the most consequential queens in the history of the world, no doubt. Only lived to be 53. In 1864, Congress authorized for the first time the use of the phrase "In God We Trust" on U.S. coins. In 1870, the birthday of the communist revolutionary Vladimir Lenin was born. Actually born Vladimir Ilyich Ulyanov in Simbirsk, Russia. And I'm sure if you speak Russian, you're laughing at my pronunciation. Born on this day in 1904, J. Robert Oppenheimer, the American nuclear physicist who headed the country's atomic bomb development project and was reminded after the first test of an atomic bomb of the Hindu scripture that said, "I am become death, the destroyer of worlds." 1937, Jack Nicholson born on this day. Happy birthday, Jack Nicholson. I could ask that question today. What's your favorite Jack Nicholson film? Gosh, 1 year away from being age 80. I'll have to think on that one, my favorite Jack Nicholson film. He's got, of course, so many. 1970, the first Earth Day was celebrated, and today is Earth Day. So Mother Nature, knock yourself out. No, I think we're more mindful, perhaps, hopefully we're more mindful of our responsibility toward our stewardship of this earth. We read back in the early chapters of Genesis this idea of dominion that God gave us as human beings, made in his image and likeness. This dominion over the created order is not meant to be an exploitive dominion, but a dominion just like God's dominion over us that brings us to our full flourishing. And so there's absolutely nothing incompatible about genuine environmental conservatism and the faith. In fact, they go hand in hand. And if you need a reminder, read Pope Francis' Laudato Si as a reminder. In 1986, Marshawn Lynch, born on this day. Of course, Marshawn recently retiring from football, beast mode, as they called him. Still don't know why Pete Carroll didn't give him the ball two Super Bowls ago. But Marshawn Lynch, an interesting character, because he seems like, you know, a lot of people have this impression, I'm typical spoiled athlete and dealing with the media and so forth. But if you read what Marshawn Lynch has been doing since his retirement, building homes in Haiti, for example. Pretty impressive. So people are much more complicated than you oftentimes think. And of course, getting out at age 30 for a running back, not a bad idea, because their careers tend to slide pretty quickly after that. And then Richard Nixon, 37th president of the United States, died on this day in 1994 at the age of 81, 4 days after suffering a stroke. Talk about the quintessential incarnation of the reality that it's not always, and not even usually, the crime. It's the cover-up that does you in. 573-4BREAD-4 if you want to chime in. 573-4BREAD-4, or you can email me, MikeAllenShow@gmail.com. Read yesterday, of course, of a couple of stories related to tweets that got people in trouble. We live, of course, in this day of instant social media and people who are outspoken, people who like to get their opinions out there, who, you know, say things sometimes before thinking. One of those, of course, Curt Schilling. Curt Schilling, who sent out a tweet regarding transgendered people and restrooms and so forth. And, you know, there are a lot of people out there now, of course, people who I would probably normally agree with on issues like the fact that you can't separate gender from embodiment and so forth, but who are now, you know, calling Curt Schilling's firing another example of PC run amok and all that stuff. You know, when you're a public person like Curt Schilling and you've been warned by your employer, because it's not just that Curt Schilling has, I really don't believe in this case, even though I'm sure there are those in the ESPN upper management who are ridiculously hypersensitive when it comes to politically correctness. You know, there are ways to express your opinion that are not as harsh as they have to be. And for Curt Schilling, of course, he has made a habit, not simply of stating his opinion, but doing it in almost the most offensive way possible. In fact, he had a 2015 tweet equating Muslim extremists with the Nazi regime in Germany, for example, that threw many, many Muslims under the bus. He'd been warned by his employer, and then he'd send out some sort of a strange picture of a cross-dressing person saying something about, you know, bathroom facilities or whatever. I don't know that Curt Schilling has anybody to blame here but himself in this regard. You've been warned by your employer, even though I would probably agree with certain foundational ideas Curt Schilling has. I think when you're a public person like that, you've got to think before you tweet in the way that you tweet. Then I came across this story. Well, actually, this story preceded the Curt Schilling story. Top editor at Catholic News Service reportedly pushed out over pro-LGBT tweets. This from NPR's story. The director and editor-in-chief of Catholic News Service, a news agency affiliated with the U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops, has reportedly been pushed out of his position after an outcry over tweets endorsing LGBT rights. Spence, who has headed the CNS, Catholic News Service, since 2004, was active on Twitter. Maybe that was his problem. Tweeting mostly about news within the Catholic Church, but occasionally sharing stories on the journalism industry, world news, and pop culture. He tweeted about sainthood dates, the Pope and refugees, Flannery O'Connor's faith, and the infuriating failures of the D.C. Metro. But it was tweets, according to the NPR story, about the gender identity legislation in North Carolina and what supporters call the religious liberties measures in Mississippi and related issues that reportedly led to his dismissal. So here's an example, right? He had hashtag LGBT protections. That's lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender, in case you're wondering. Hashtag LGBT protections get flushed as North Carolina governor signs bill over hashtag bathroom wars. He says, a stupid, evidently contagious. This is another tweet. Tennessee tries to join Mississippi, North Carolina, Indiana in passing pro-discrimination laws. Evidently, Spence was then roundly criticized by different Catholic blogs for tweets that he had posted. Here he is representing the U.S. Bishops Media Service. One conservative Catholic site wrote about Spence this week that he promotes LGBT rights and openly sided with the homosexual agenda. He had had several other tweets as well. Let's see. Let's go on here just a little bit. Spence spoke to America, the National Catholic Review, on Thursday. He said he did not believe his Twitter comments would provoke such a backlash, but that he had been, to his mind, merely commenting on developing news on a subject frequently covered by CNS staff. He said he had not he had anticipated ending his career with the Catholic News Service, but not so soon. 63 and unemployed, not the brightest prospects, he said with a grim laugh. He added that my 12 years at CNS have been the best 12 years of my professional life. I have a good friend who worked for Spence down when he worked for the Diocesan newspaper in Nashville and said he was one of the most kindest and professional people that he had ever met. And he's just saddened by this development. But again, when you're Mr. Spence and you're in this position, folks, think before you tweet. Now, I don't know the ins and outs of the story. Perhaps he was offered an opportunity to apologize and refused. We don't know. The employer can never comment on reasons for termination. But be careful out there, folks. Be careful before you tweet. We'll be back with Father Tom Galloway. This is The Mike Allen Show.